Thanks, Kim, for joining me today in this our shelter at home time, or shelter
it's
at home.
It's a pleasure. Yes, it's a pleasure to be here with you, and it's sort of like a little return to normalcy.
That's right. Well, let's grab every moment of normalcy we can.
Yes.
So I want to talk with you about radical candor because you have written a book that is very well known, certainly in the technology industry, but I'm sure actually at this point far and wide in the business industry. And I'd like to talk about how you went from tuning your own leadership practices to sharing and training others to become better leaders. How did you make that shift from expert practitioner to, you know, almost a platform leader, let's say?
Yeah, so, sort of the short answer is totally accidentally. what happened was I was at Google, and after my kids were born, I sort of realized the thing that I really loved the most about my work and the thing that got me out of bed in the morning was not cost per click, although that was going very well at Google, but rather it was the opportunity to work with a great team of people and to build the kind of environment in which people really enjoy coming to work. Sort of, I call it, am I allowed to curse on your...
Absolutely, show? Absolutely.
Creating these bullshit-free zones at work. And trying to the maximum extent possible to just take the nonsense out of people's days and give them an opportunity to take a step in the direction of their dreams. And so I started looking around at Google for opportunities where that, instead of cost per click, could be my day job. And around about this time, my favorite professor from business school, Richard Tedlow, called me up and said, oh, I have left Harvard and I've joined Apple, and we're trying to create these new courses that help leaders be better leaders. Would you like to come and learn more? And I said, of course. And with that, I left Google and I joined Apple, and I worked with a great team of people designing this course called Managing at Apple. And most of my lessons, of course, coming from my own startups and from Google, not from Apple. But, you know, it turns out that managing is very similar across industries, across companies, even if the companies are very different, because people are people. And there's a lot that is different about people, of course, but there's also even more similarities that we have. And so I designed this class at Apple, and then a friend of mine from Google became CEO of Twitter, and he said, would you come, his name is Dick Costolo, and he said, would you come and help me design managing at Twitter? And lo and behold, managing at Twitter looked almost exactly like managing at Apple, looked almost exactly like managing at Google, and I thought, you know, this is a kind of a universal thing. And then all of a sudden, Dick announced in a press interview that I was his coach.
Yeah.
I was his CEO coach. And then all of a sudden, I had a lot of clients, more clients than I could handle. I love coaching, but coaching doesn't scale. You can only really properly help about five people at a time.
Yeah.
And so I decided that I would try to scale myself, and I would write this book, which became Radical Candor. And I started doing some talks and some workshops as I was writing it to sort of put the, just see how the ideas, what was the best way to communicate the ideas. And that was really, that was great fun. And then I sold the book and I had a little time on my hands because it turns out there's a long time between the time that you sell a book and the time that it actually gets published. And I live in Silicon Valley, and of course, inevitably, somebody was like, you should start a company. There's an app for that.
Right.
And so, indeed, I started this company, and we tried to build an app that would help people put the ideas in the book into practice. And we built one app and it didn't really work. And we built another app and it didn't really work. And we built a third app and it still wasn't really working. And I was at a performance that my daughter was in, and I was filming her on my phone. And I happened to glance up from the phone at one point and look at my actual physical daughter. And she was up on stage singing, Believe It or Not, It's Just Me. And my eyes filled with tears. And I realized, what am I thinking? Like, if the whole point of radical candor is to help people remember to put their phones away, look each other in the eye and have a real human conversation, this app is kind of a value-subtracting round trip.
Yeah.
So we focused on the things that don't scale, talks and workshops. They don't scale, but they do work. So we focused on what was working. But I kept trying to think about what are ways that we can really help people put these ideas into practice. Because when you write a book about feedback, you're going to get a lot of feedback. And I got a lot of feedback, and the feedback was pretty consistent. It's like, really easy for you, Kim, to say, be radically candid. Really hard for me to do it. Really hard for me to teach my team how to do it. So how can you help? And how can you help at scale? Because there's only so many talks and workshops that you know, even if you train up a bunch of great people, there's only so many talks and workshops that you all can do. And there's only so many companies who can afford to pay for an in-person talk and workshop.
True.
And so we started thinking about ways to scale it. And in the course of talking to Kelly Leonard at Second City, which is the improv show, the improv theater in Chicago, he wrote a great book called Yes and I was on his podcast. And we started thinking, you know, so much of radical candor is really, it's improv.
Yeah.
And so much of what we're talking about helping people do is finding ways to practice being better human beings, not just like being better managers, but being better people, having better conversations. And for all these other skills in our lives that we have, if you learn to be an engineer, if you learn to play the piano, we have all these drills and all these practices, but where's the human practice?
Yeah.
And so we began developing a bunch of workshops with Second City, and then we realized, you know, one great way to explain to people what radical candor is and what it isn't and how to put it into practice would be to make a sitcom. And to show how managers struggle with this, that's where the humor comes in, but also show how they get it right. And so we developed this show called The Feedback Loop. It's a sort of like The Office, but it teaches you how to get things wrong right instead of just showing you how things go wrong. And it's sort of 5 short episodes. And now we're helping companies roll this out at scale, even in these times, because you can do these sort of virtual viewing parties with teams, which turns out to be a really fun way to bond in this crazy moment that we find ourselves in.
Yeah. That's so fascinating. I mean, I love the story arc of what you did here because, you know, interestingly enough, you said you founded it by accident, but in many ways, you know, you taught your way to expertise. The teaching made you analyze,
yeah,
and define, right? And
yeah,
also your growth was triggered by your relationships with people. It's, you know, the people you nurtured these relationships with kind of showed you the way by inviting you to do this course and that course and saying you're my executive coach. Yeah. Yeah, so it's not, you know, it is a serendipitous, but it's also, you know, those relationships are clearly the product of what you do, of living and breathing what you preach. So that's really,
I hope, cool. So. I hope I walk the walk. Most of the time I do, but it's hard for me too. I mean, the reason why I wrote the book is that radical candor doesn't feel natural. It's what feels natural is sort of, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
And so figuring out how to help people overcome those instincts, which have been instilled in us really since we learned to speak,
yeah.
I think is the trick of radical candor.
Yeah, yeah, I can see how, you know, I would certainly fall into the ruinous empathy camp way too much.
Yes.
And I'm sure I'm not alone in that.
You're in very good company.
I'm in good company, yeah, which is just fascinating. What you're offering is really so generous. But then the fact that you went from, so let's talk for a moment about the book, because it has gone, you know, been published in dozens of languages.
Like 20 languages. It's been really, really exciting to see it spread.
Great.
In fact, yeah, the other day I was working with, in the morning I was working with a client in Turkey, and in the evening I was working with a client in China. So it's really cool to see.
That is cool. And you would think that there is a strong cultural component to this, and yet somehow the need for it is very cross-cultural.
If you abstract up what is radical candor, it's care personally and challenge directly at the same time. And what does that mean? It's about love and truth. And there's no culture on earth that doesn't think love and truth are important human values.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you do such a, I picked up and read the book, and you describe it so beautifully, and you have so many wonderful stories that really bring it to life in a very meaningful way. So now I look forward to watching the sitcom. I mean, that looks pretty cool.
Oh, good.
I think that's what a genius way to reach other people in a different way than with the book and with the workshops. It's really interesting. So now I have to ask, you know that you have made a cultural impact when you are parodied, I guess, on HBO Silicon Valley,
yes.
And you show up in Dilbert.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's good to be mocked.
It's good to be mocked.
Both of those resulted in tremendous book sales. So
I can imagine.
They can mock me some more if they want.
Right, right. I mean, because obviously the parodies arise from a deep misunderstanding of your message that radical
yeah.
candor is something else, an excuse to be a jerk.
Act like a jerk. Yeah, that is the most common misunderstanding, is I'll walk into a room and somebody will say, in the spirit of radical candor, and then they'll just behave like a garden variety jerk. And that is not the spirit of radical candor.
Clearly someone did not, in fact, read beyond the title page. You
know? Yeah, yeah, or even past the title.
Right, but you know, so how do you deal with that? I mean, you get this feedback, it's like, it's got to be frustrating. It's like, people, have you read this? Do you
yeah.
just let that roll
yeah.
off your back? Do you just say, you know, yeah, it sold books? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It actually prompted us to publish a second edition of Radical Candor, because all joking aside, there is a real misunderstanding of radical candor, and there are companies and leaders who use radical candor as an excuse to behave really badly, and that bothered me at a very fundamental level. Obviously, you know, I'm about to sneeze.
Bless you.
I didn't sneeze. Sorry, I thought I was going to sneeze. So obviously, you want people to understand your message in the way that you intended. But it really made me think, was there a better way for me to have described radical candor? And so in the second edition, we offer people an alternative to the radical candor framework. And what we said is, if you're in an organization where people are using radical candor, abusing radical candor, and using it as an excuse to act like a jerk, we want you to pass around this framework, which is the compassionate candor framework. And it was interesting about, because I had thought about calling the book Compassionate Candor instead of Radical Candor in the first place. And To be totally frank with you, part of the reason I didn't call it Compassionate Candor was that I was afraid that people would sort of say, oh, this is just a bunch of soft feminine leadership BS. Mm-hmm. And it actually not only did it prompt me to write the second edition and to offer people the term Compassionate Candor, it actually has prompted me to write a whole other book called Just Work that really focuses on gender injustice in the workplace and how it, gender injustice can make it much more difficult to be radically candid and to be successful, frankly, and what you can do about sort of bias, prejudice, and bullying in the workplace, as well as discrimination and harassment.
Excellent. So you took the, you know, you took that.
I took the feedback and I did something with it.
And you did something very constructive with it, which is great. I mean, to some extent, we lose control of the message when it's out, but you are not letting people hide under the umbrella of radical candor.
I felt like I owed it to the message to be very clear about what it was and what it wasn't. And to take some ownership for misunderstandings.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, it's so, words are so loaded, you know, radical gets attention. But
yeah. It was a very successful title.
Yeah.
But you know, like a lot of successful things, it can cut both ways.
Right. Right. Yeah. So now you are, scaling up this you are working, you have co-founded another, you know, you're working on training through your Radical Candor organization, right? You've got a bunch of people who coach to do coaching. You are working with partners internationally. What do you say, what you're going to say is the specific audience you're really hoping to reach? Is it very broad?
Very broad, yes. The Radical Candor is focused on managers, but increasingly we're finding that managers want us to reach out to the broader organization, so to help them create a culture of radical candor. Hmm. So very often what we're doing with our customers is some sort of high-touch workshops with leaders of the company, and then some of these more scalable solutions for a broader audience at the companies. And I would say it's gone well beyond tech. I mean, definitely radical candor took off first in tech, but we have worked with all different kinds of companies, some sort of heavy manufacturing companies, elevator companies in Switzerland. We've worked with with companies in Ohio that make really heavy equipment. We've worked with a bunch of finance companies ranging from bulge bracket banks to private equity firms. So we found that the message resonates quite broadly within different industries and also sort of organizationally, from the CEO to the more recent employees.
Right. I mean, you know, I don't think you can find an industry that doesn't have examples of toxic workplaces that need better constructive feedback. And, you know,
unfortunately, it's a very broad problem.
Yeah, right. But it's one that gets you know, out of bed every day to solve, which is cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking back on this journey, when did the first edition of Radical Candor come out?
March of 2017.
So it's, gosh, 3 years. Okay.
Yeah.
So looking back over this 3-year arc, and obviously there was a lot of work beforehand as you were preparing the book courses.
I thought, because I had designed these courses and I had taught these courses, I thought that I could write Radical Candor in 3 months.
Yeah.
And four years later, I was finally finished. So it turns out it takes a long time to write a book.
That's interesting.
If you take it seriously.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. I mean, I've always written in many ways. In fact, my business career was a strange way to subsidize my novel writing habit. So I loved the writing process. I enjoyed it tremendously. But it's definitely, it takes a long time.
Yeah. You think it's all in your head, and then you go to write it, and there's a lot more.
and you start arguing with yourself, and you're like, "Do I really believe that? No, I don't actually really believe that."
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you really have to think deeply to do it. which is, I think, the mistake some people think about something that they're expert in writing the book in. It's like, well, you become a different kind of expert once you've written the book, right? And it's not because you published the book, it's because the work you've done in writing it.
And getting feedback on it. I had, I think, at one point, 100 collaborators on the Google Doc I was writing Radical Candor. Wow. So I tried to get a lot of feedback on this book, and it really made it better. It worked, the feedback.
Yeah, 100 collaborators. That's impressive. Wow. All right. So what advice would you give to someone who has a similar cause they're impassioned about and they want to go out and try to, you know, make a difference in the world by sharing their writing, by sharing their ideas through writing or other means? What is there any advice you would give someone?
I think if you want to write a book, the most important thing is that you've got to sort of take a deep breath and find a way to enjoy the process of writing, because it's a long process, and it can be enjoyed, but it can also be cruel and unusual punishment. So you've got to find a way to get that. I would say the first most difficult thing is getting inside your own head and finding a writing schedule that works for you. I experimented with, like, could I work 4 hours straight? No, I could not. So I found like an hour and a half, and then take a call or take a walk or do a walk and a call at the same time worked for me. But find the schedule that works for you and that allows you to keep your energy up and your interest levels up, and then just stick to it. You got to write every single day.
Yeah.
And you got to write for a good chunk of time. Doesn't have to be full time, but you got to give it at least an hour and a half a day, I would say.
Yeah.
And then the very hardest thing about writing is getting back out of your head. And so finding some people whose thinking you admire, who you trust to edit that book, and more than one, is really, really important to the process, because you can't get back out of your head without other people, I don't think.
Yeah, you're right. It's the curse of knowledge. We know what we know, and we can't see what's there and what's not there and what people don't understand and all of that.
Yeah. And some things will be so clear to you, and you'll write them, and other people will have no idea what you're saying.
Right. And that it's so one of the tricks on that, actually, feedback related, is getting the right kind of feedback. I mean, the thing I ask people to tell me is, where do you get bored? Where do you confuse? Where did you stop and read twice? You know, they don't even have to fix it. The value is them telling you where, how it landed with them. And you can try to figure out how to fix it then. But you need to know where,
And different people edit differently. Some people really want to try to fix it for you.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Let them. But you're probably not going to accept their language. It's your book, after all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the way that they fix it will be very educational for you.
Right. You still see where they're fixing and what it was that they're trying to get at that was an issue for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see what was confusing for them.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, let people edit in the way that works for them.
Yeah.
You know, don't criticize the criticism that you get.
Right. But remember that, you still are the captain of your ship, which is nice. But I love your idea that, you know, you have to find the joy in the process. You have to, you set it up so that it's that way, or else, you know, why?
Yeah. Because, I mean, I was very lucky with Radical Candor, but there were 4 other books I wrote that never saw the light of day. And that was okay, because I enjoyed writing them.
Yeah.
Like, you have to find the intrinsic pleasure in writing. Otherwise it's just too discouraging.
Yeah. And well, I think too, you know, as a reader, I think you can tell when you're writing something that someone just is slogging through a checklist to put out versus something that they, right? I mean, something carries through there in terms of how it lands. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for sharing your story. That's some great advice, and what a great and interesting journey from sort of being invited to teach a class to where you are now, producing sitcoms that are going to correct all the problems of The Office.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. From your mouth to God's ear.
Right, right. It's wonderful. I really appreciate you taking the time to share a little bit about that story with us. So thanks so much.
Well, thank you. And thank you for encouraging other writers. I think Virginia Woolf said very well, she said, "Why do I want to encourage so many other writers?" And the reason is that I love to read. And yeah. I have this fear of running out of books. So I love reading and I love to encourage other writers.
Yes, you and me both. Great, great. Thank you.